Parshas Toldos opens up the Eila Toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. And then it says, Avram Hoylides Yitzchak. Avram begot or was the father of Yitzchak. Why twice? And the Mefarshim all talk about why is this a double lashon, right? And Rashi says the Torah wanted to make people well aware that Yitzchak and Avram were father and son, and as a matter of fact, they resembled one another. If you looked at Avram, you didn't know if it was he or Yitzchak, and similarly the other one, until Avram asked that people begin to show signs of aging. And Rashi says, why was this necessary? Because it says, the Leitzim, all the scoffers of the generation, said, there's no way Avram could have had a child at age 100. Yitzchak must have been somebody else's offspring. Couldn't be Avram. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliberately had them look alike. And so you couldn't say that they were not father and son. Rav Shloima Zevin, his Latoyra of the Lamoadim, Rabbi Rosner says, in his classic style, says there's two types of offspring in the world. We have natural offspring, being, right, DNA offspring, we share the same biology, and then we have what he calls intellectual offspring. One person being the logical extension of the other. He says, if you want to look in the Gemara, we talk about Avot and Tolot Toledet. He says, let's look at, he looks at the rules of Shabbos. So we have an of malacha, the main malacha you cannot plant, let us say, and you get derivatives, do not dig, etc. Right? He says, there are two different activities, but there's a logical connection one to the other. If you don't dig, you don't plant. Right? One flows from the other. He says, if he wants to then turn to the laws of Tumah, and we know that if an Aviyah Avos HaTama, the most significant one other than a mace, touches Adam HaKelim, an individual or utensil, they become a Rishon. Right? We basically pass on the concept. Rav Zevin says, I want to apply this concept to people. We have parents. We have biological people who DNA created us. And then we have those who we call halachic and intellectual descendants. He says, a Rebbe has a Talmud. The Talmud studies. Let us say the classic example of Yehoshua ben Nun serving Moshe Rabbeinu. And basically, this Talmud becomes, right, a child. He becomes an extension of his Rebbe. And the Gemara tells us, someone who teaches someone else's child Torah is considered that he was the parent, the father. He says, I'm going to tell you a story about something that occurred at a wedding. Rav Shach was there, and Rav Shloime Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shloime Zalman Auerbach was an uncle of the Chassan, who was learning in Parnasich. And they were each arguing that the other one should be Mesader Kedusha. Right? Rav Shach said to Rav Auerbach, you're a relative, you come first. And he said, absolutely not. You're his Rebbe. You're like a father. He doesn't tell us who got it. But he says you can see what they were talking about. He says, in the ideal situation, in the case of Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, the biological father was also the Rebbe. He's the one who gave the Mesorah to his child. Avram had both relationships with Yitzchak. He was his father, and he was his Rebbe. He says, when this happens, there is no way, he says, the offspring reject the connection. He says it's almost like a locked-in box. He says the biology is there. Okay, we understand that. You can't change your biology. But he says if the Rebbe is the perfect Rebbe who appeals intellectually and spiritually to the child again becomes locked in. It's not, I would say, an imprisonment, but a natural extension of one's mind. Avram took both roles to heart. And Yitzchak obviously was the perfect Talmud. And, right, we know that Avram gave it to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak, right? But again, we had the selection that Yishmael went off to the side. We go the next generation, and we get, as we learned in this week's Parsha, Yaakov and Esav, right? Again, only one of Yitzchak's children, Yaakov, took the mission. And so, Shlomo Rosner goes back, he says, the first Pasuk is teaching us something. There are toldos of Avram. That's Yitzchak, not Yishmael. Yitzchak fit the mold. And in the next step of the transition, there was Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov fit the mold. And it wasn't until we get to the B'nai Yaakov that we actually had 12 sons who were willing to be both the biological and the religious children of Yaakov Avinu. The selection process, right, had to go through four generations. The pasuk tells us that the children in her womb, after Rivka was told by Shem and Aver she had twins, struggled. And it was such a massive upheaval, right? She said, if this is the case, why am I like this?
You're complaining.
Huh? I don't know what the complaint there was, but this was the most unnatural, seemingly, gestation period anybody had ever heard about. In other words, and she realized that if it was one child, it was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The Rabbonim say that if she passed the Yeshiva of Shein V'Ever, wherever that was, Yaakov wanted to run out, and he made an effort. And if, God forbid, there was idolatry in the vicinity, Esav had the same type of reaction. Chazal say they were each running to get out. Yaakov was trying to get out. But it says, how could Yaakov wanted to go out to learn from Shem the Aver? He had a mala teaching him in the womb. We know that Kola Tyra Kula. And he quotes from Rav Chaim Brisker that since Yaakov shared the womb with Esav, right, it was preferable to him to give up learning from a malach and learn from Shein V'Ever and not have to coexist with a Russia. A red person can have the very best Rebbe. He can have the very best chavrusa. However, if the social environment around, right, is inappropriate, these inappropriate effects, the inappropriate surroundings can basically create damage, whatever it is, can impede the right, the person. Pirkei Avos says, Al tischaber l'Russia. And Avos de Rav Nosson says, Yafilu l'Torah. Listen to this. Don't get together with somebody who you know is basically wrong, even if the guy's giving a gemara shiur today. You've got to know, basically, who you're trying to learn from. And Rabbi Rosner points out, even if you're learning with a mala, if the guy next to you, chepiching you, is Esav, you got to run away. I mean, it's an amazing concept. Surroundings matter. Doesn't matter how high a level you're in, right? If you're surrounded by untoward elements, it's going to affect you. And he brings a story about a Yid from Lodz, who as a young boy wanted to leave yeshiva and enter the business world. His father said to him, no, you're much too young. So they went to the Chafetz Chaim. The father said, my son's not ready. The business world can have a negative effect on him. Well, the child said, you know what? how about if I learn to work from my, I apprentice from my father, who's a good person, right? And maybe one day I'm actually going to take over his business. So why shouldn't I begin now? The Chafetz Chaim said, he says, we find in Tanakh the mention of a cruel bird called a Bat Yana. The Bat Yana has a fierce personality and a hot temperament, such to the extent that when it gets agitated, it can even eat glass. And the Bat Yana assumes that if it can do so, its young can too. And she tries to give them some glass to eat. Unfortunately, their bodies aren't developed, and so they die. The Chafetz Chaim, you said, your father is set. He has set an environment around him, which basically is self-protective. He's the mature Bat Yana. He can look at the glass in the world and be, try to eat it and be unaffected. You're too young. You have not as yet developed your spiritual abilities to eat glass. He says, Yaakov Avinu knew this lesson even as a fetus, that it's better to learn in a pristine, kosher environment than to have to live next to a Russia. The surroundings that one is in has such an effect that we're told we can never basically ignore that and feel that we can be better than that. Yaakov and Esav, right, finally are born. And they battle the fetuses, and I think there's a medrash that says that Esav even ripped out Rivka's womb. He basically made her sterile when he was born.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah.
Where? And we hear that, right? Rivka loves Yaakov, and there's something about Esav and Yitzchak, right? And the Torah lets us know pretty strongly that Esav is somebody we have to reject. He's not to be considered a role model. Yaakov, on the other hand, is called the Ish Tam Yoshev HaHolim, the one who learns, who does what's appropriate. And we know the story that when Avram dies, Yaakov prepares the bean soup, right, which was given to mourners in those days, and Esav comes and says, I'm going to die, give me this, and he sells his birthright for the beans. Pirkei Rebbe Lozer says, while they were still in the womb, Yaakov said to Esav, there's two worlds. Olam Hazeh, the physical world, eating, drinking, marrying, etc. And then there's Olam Haba, the world to come. And Olam Haba is not a place where the mundane desires exist. I'll make you a deal. You take Olam Hazeh, I'll take Olam Haba. Yosef, right? We're told the story. Asaph comes home from a long day in the field. He's tired, he's hungry, he's probably agitated, and he sees soup. And he demands it. And Yaakov demands the birthright. And Esav says, I'm going to die anyway. What do I need it for? What is this about? He quotes of Avishai David, Talmud of the Soloveitchik, who was Rosh Yeshiva in Toronto for a while. And he says, Esav is here and now. No patience. I want it. I need it now. I have no desire to wait for anything that I want. Let me do it now. The heck with what result. If I enjoy it now, good. Esav comes from the word asui, complete. He is in haste. He doesn't want to process how to get somewhere if he can take a shortcut. As we know, he was fully formed. He was born with hair. Yaakov, obviously, when he said from the very beginning, I want Olam Haba, right, had the long-term view of existence. But Soloveitchik says, what happened to the descendants of Esav and Yaakov? Esav received Har Seir right away. ASAP, right? He gets Har Seir. We know that Yaakov and his generations first had to go to Mitzrayim and go through some type of process of building a nation. It wasn't just through procreation and living together. It had to go through a process. Esav is unable to live in a world requiring process. It's now or never. Yaakov has patience. We know that Yaakov Avinu planted trees in the Mitzrayim because he knew the Atzei Shittim were going to be needed for the Mishkan going out years later. And he knew the Bris Ben Absorim, that it was going to be hundreds of years. But it didn't matter. It's something that's needed for the long term. I've got to do it. And then he says, let's turn to the end of the encounters of Esav and Yaakov in the Yishlach. When, after Yaakov comes back from Lavan, and he encounters Esav. And Yaakov says to Esav, nah, please take my gift. And he says it a couple of times. What does this mean? He says that not to mean raw. I'm giving you a gift of the here and now. Here's animals. You have something that you can use immediately. We say, Ana Hashem Hoshia Na. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please save us now. Immediacy. Yaakov knew Esav well. He said, you run ahead. I'm going slow. I'll catch up with you. You, Esav, need the here and now. You need to act spontaneously. I can't do that. It's just not my nature, and it's not my worldview. Rabbi David, who wrote this essay, says, our generation is a nah generation. He says, there's too many people in the here and now who need instant gratification. That's the ace of influence. He says, how many students want to know the whole Torah, as we say, a regel echad, on one foot? They don't want to have to go through the tedious effort of trying to learn. They don't want to work through 72 lines of Tosfos. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us stories of nah, of being too hasty, right? Moshe was late by how long before the Jews gave up that he was dead at Diego, right? Shaul HaMelech didn't wait for Shmuel, a Navi, before he started his war with Amalek and gave in to the people because he wasn't instructed again. He said, the message that we, as the descendants of Yaakov, have to have is we need patience. We need to look at the long term. Yaakov's patience and his consideration of where all steps lead, probably the greatest flow chart drawer of all time, led to him being able to create Kol Yisroel. He said, whenever we become hasty, think about it, we're not nah people, we're B'nai Yaakov. Okay. That's today's show. Thank you very much for your time. Have a lovely day.
Thank you. Have a nice day. See you tomorrow.